National Radio Club.
This portion of Market Scope is brought to you by your radio. Record the stations in your market and send them to Phil. You too can show how your community sounds on the Market Scope.
IDXers, welcome to Market Scope, where we play current and past air checks from radio stations all over the planet. This month, we're pulling some unmarked cassettes from the library shelf and discovering what's on them. Here goes.
104.1 WLBC weather.
For Yorktown, Marion, Muncie, and all of East Central Indiana, Channel 13's Chuck Lofton is telling us for today we'll see increasing cloudiness as the day goes on. 56 by the afternoon, then tonight, scattered showers around East Central Indiana, dropping down to 44 the overnight. Tomorrow, rain early in the day, then some sunshine later. Look for the mid-40s and the weekend. Sunny, 44 on Saturday. By Sunday, partly sunny skies and 50. And then kicking off the week on Monday, of course, don't forget me, Chris Green. Midnight until 6 on WLBC. Partly sunny skies, a chance of rain, and 44 then. Right now, WLBC radar is clear. And it's now 37 in East Central Indiana at the station with the 10-minute weather guarantee each and every single morning. WLBC. Today's best music and instant updates when news happens. Don't forget another great cause WLBC is supporting is the Newcastle Shop with a Cop program. This Sunday, December 12th, 1 p.m. tip-off, a charity basketball game between the Newcastle Police Department and WLBC. And we're going to reward a few East Central Indiana fans with some nice little gifts. How about some Ball State men's basketball tickets to see the Cardinals in Northern Illinois? Or we might even send you to see the Pacers and Lakers at Conseco Fieldhouse. 104.1 WLBC, today's best music and the 10-minute weather guarantee. Every morning, good morning, I'm Chris Green, in with your 10-minute weather guarantee. For today, increasing cloudiness up to 56 in the afternoon, then tonight, scattered showers down to 40, and tomorrow, rain early, clearing up, some sunshine. Look for about 45. Right now, 37 in East Central Indiana with Steve Lindell and the WLBC Morning Show. First listener of the day club, your chance for dinner at Texas Roadhouse. Coming up next, but now The Cure on WLBC.
I don't care if Monday.
104.1 WLBC, today's best music in the 10-minute weather guarantee every morning. I don't hear bells ringing. What's the problem there? What happened there?
Sorry.
What?
I didn't get the paper.
Paper?
Yeah, I was reading the paper. I didn't know.
24 hours of ringing the bell for the salvation. I think the promotional announcement was very clear.
I just put it down for a second because you need two hands to read the paper.
No, you don't.
Sure you do.
No, you don't.
I got the cook lady here helping me out reading the paper. How you doing, ma'am? You all right? All right, fantastic. What's the deal, Steve?
What do you mean?
I'm completely confused. I was just reading the paper about...
Checking in with you. What's going on?
I mean... the Star Press here.
Tired? What's going on?
I'm not tired at all. I'm in my 13th hour, man. Actually, hold on. Let me do the math.
I've been noticing that. You've been having a difficult time with the math.
I don't know what the deal is.
You started at 5 yesterday. At 5 this morning, it was 12.
Yeah.
One more would be 13. Very nice.
Thank you very much.
Is this hard, Dave?
No. Hey, is that our newspaper? If that's our USA Today, bring it in, Adam.
Okay, yeah. It's on its way.
How did it get there?
Guys, we have raised so much money so far for the Salvation Army.
Not nearly enough.
Absolutely amazing.
Not nearly enough.
Close to the record I want to break. I want to break every kettle record in the United States.
What was Lieutenant Dan saying yesterday? $104 an hour or something like that? That's what he wanted to average?
We're close to that.
It's all for the kids. That's what it's for.
It is. It's a great thing. I'm proud to be part of it, Steve.
So what else can I do for you? Anything here?
Nope. The coffee's great.
Did I do the coffee?
No.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, we got to do this thing. You're not first listener of the day, by the way.
I know that.
Okay, here we go.
The WLBC First Listener Club is accepting calls now. First one on the air with Steve Lindell wins the LBC First Listener Prize Pack. Call 289-9522. That's 289-WLBC.
Well, all right then. Here we go. First listener of the day. And hi, hello, good morning. You're it.
Well, fantastic.
Well, say hi to Adam Grubb.
Well, Hello, Adam.
How are you? Good morning to you.
I feel for you, babe.
Oh, hey, no, it's no problem at all. I'm having a great time, but thank you for your concern. I hope you come out and give me a little bit of time and effort and give the Salvation Army some money.
Okay, sure will.
Thank you very much.
What's your name?
Lois Swain.
Lois, we're going to hold you to that.
Hey, I sure will.
Lois, how about dinner at Texas Roadhouse in Muncie?
Super.
$10 off your meal, immediate seating for your whole darn group, and the Pepsi prize pack, too. Way to go, Lois.
Thank you.
They're going to rush right over and donate some money to the Salvation Army, right?
You gotcha.
Lois, I expect to see you here in 15 minutes.
Well, maybe 25 to an hour.
Yeah, 20 minutes.
Okay.
She's got to do her hair.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah.
Look pretty for me, Lois.
Hey, she's no different than you.
Fine. Fantastic.
Lois, congratulations. First listener of the day. Don't hang up. She's our winner. You could be it tomorrow morning at 6 for first listener of the day.
104.1 WLBC FM Muncie.
Don't hear the bell. There you go.
Jeez.
I'm telling you, I'm on here 3 hours. I'm going to hold you to 3 hours at least.
Fine.
I'm ringing that darn bell.
I'll do it, baby.
Got it?
I'll do it, baby.
All right. This is WLBC, Steve Lindell. We're headed for 56 today. 36 now, WLBC.
This is Indiana's
Radio WHIT. Happy holidays, everybody. 93.5, 96.7. Hit Radio. John Sanders, Sarah Slater, the big old smelly show for Thursday.
Hey, that's something everyone can enjoy.
Thank you, Mr. Melman. That reminds me, King of Media, David Letterman. Back on with us today.
Yeah.
I'm kind of afraid of what he's going to talk about. You can't tell Dave to shut up, you know?
No, you can't.
He owns everything. It's 641. Question of the day. Forbes magazine said this toy is the most popular, successful, and socially relevant toy of the last 100 years. Someone said jump rope crayons. We said no.
As they say, let's go to the phones.
Clue was, it has teeth but does not bite. Caller, who is this? Hello.
Oh, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
This is Kathy.
Kathy, where are you from?
I'm from Muncie.
Muncie? What do you do for a living, Kathy?
I'm an accountant.
Oh, we got a lot of accountants out there.
We have a lot of smart people.
Now, I know. Friday, Saturday nights, you accountants are a wild bunch.
That's right.
Don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you stay up late writing outside of the margins, don't you?
Do you have your own office or do you work for a firm?
Got a wild streak.
I work for Ball Foster Glass.
Oh, great. You make glass jars.
Yeah.
I'm very familiar with glass. Glass jars and bottles. What's your guess on the toy thing?
Toy of the century is Legos.
Oh, how did you know that?
She got it.
How did I know?
What tipped it off?
Forbes magazine.
Do you read Forbes magazine, too?
No, not really.
Oh.
Well, she's an accountant, dear. She works for an accounting firm, you know.
Well, they're probably talking about not only the ability to play with the thing, but the money it produced also, aren't they?
Did you play with those in school?
Probably. Not very much.
Yeah.
Well,
we always had those in the elementary schools.
I'm a dad, so you're very aware of the presence of Legos in society when you step on one in the dark at 2 in the morning with bare feet. You know what I mean?
I've done that.
Ever do that?
Yes.
It hurts. It hurts bad. Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Hold on the line. We'll get the information from you. And since, you ever had radio booty?
Never.
All right.
Oh,
be careful. It's kind of powerful.
Okay.
We'll get it in the mail to you.
Hold on the line. We'll get the information from you.
Have a nice day at Ball Foster, okay?
Thanks.
Here's what's going on in sports news today with John and Sarah on Hit Radio.
Hit Radio Sports.
Charles Barkley suffered a career-threatening knee injury last night while trying to block a shot.
Hit Radio, East Central Indiana's WHIT.
Hit Radio, WHIT, Shania Twain.
You were so adamant about playing
this moment. It makes me feel pretty. Okay. Actually.
Yeah.
Thank you. For shopping this weekend, be careful.
Really?
6:53.
You might see him.
The weather elf. RTV6 weatherman Paul Plouty, just a couple of shakes away with us. He's here now. He's coming up at 7:12 to talk about today's weather and through the weekend. Here's Tommy Cochran.
Well, it's like a river that you travel when there's one day.
93.5, 96.7, Hit Radio, WHIT, John and Sarah, as seen on Cops.
Yes,
life
that's
is
us.
A highway, especially if you're Brian Miller.
Whew.
2 hour commute. He gets the commute award today.
Yes, from
Two
Delphi
hours.
Near Lafayette.
Over to Ball State.
Every day.
Wow. Take care.
You're quite a man, Brian.
On the road. Gosh, it's 4 hours a day of his life. It's 6:57 with John and Sarah. What happened? NSYNC did not make the MTV or the Billboard Music Awards last night.
Don't make fun of NSYNC. We have some big NSYNC fans out there.
Some kind of conspiracy.
Especially in Alexandria, dear.
Justin Timberlake is so hot. What's going on?
You think he's hot, huh? You do have issues.
I've got issues.
Sarah Duckworth, Alexis Simpson, Ashley Wilbur.
Whole gaggle of them.
Aubrey Bronner. Is it Bronner?
I don't know.
And Ashley
Tommy.
Oh,
they're all named Brittany.
Sarah, Alexis, Ashley, Aubrey, and Ashley.
Thanks a lot for the emails.
And they think you're hot.
Of course I am. Just ask me, I'll tell you.
He is. Ooh, I touched him. He's hot.
Yeah. 2 minutes to the hour. Hey, cheap, trashy, smell-o-vision trivia coming up in just a minute. So let's do some NSYNC for him now.
Yes.
That'll send him over the top. It's called You Drive Me Crazy. Here they are. Hit Radio in the Morning with John and Sarah. Oh. WHIT.
Crazy.
93.5, 96.7. Hit Radio, WHIT, Big John Sanders, Sarah Slater.
That's us.
Trying to wake you up. Work with us, people. Work with us.
Oh, I'd rather eat dirt.
7:02. Paul Poutit's going to be on the air at about 7:12, right around there. He,
Have
of course.
Noticed, he's starting to get that Ricky Martin look.
Yeah, I noticed that.
He is.
I noticed
the clothes
that.
And, you know, he's, the walk.
He's kind of Mediterranean, isn't he? He looks like he's Mediterranean.
I like that.
Turn on Channel 6 before you leave the house this morning. Tell me if he isn't just the hairiest thing you've ever seen in your life. 7:03, a look at news, and we're just a few minutes away from Paul Poutit this morning on Hit Radio WHIT.
Anderson temperature 41, 41 in Muncie. Here's the news on WHIT.
The Ray McCallum Show, exclusively on Hit Radio WHIT.
Radio WHIT
93.5 WHTY Hartford City Muncie 96.7 WHTI Alexandria Anderson
WHIT East Central Indiana
as sweet as you.
It's time for Fort Wayne's favorite game. You know it. You love it. It's time capsule. I'll take caller number 10 right now at 426-5343. That's 420. And if you're in the car, it's a free call. Star 101 from Centennial Wireless. Time capsule next. I want you to be my winner.
Oldies 101.
I love the colorful clothes you wear.
WLDE, Oldies 101.7.
It is 6:51. Les, what's your guess here?
That's a little bit before I was born, but I'll say in July of 65.
July 1965.
All right.
The Rolling Stones and Satisfaction, the top song of July 1965. This is Bill Stevens, back soon with another Time Capsule.
Hey, great job, Les.
Thank you.
Yeah, you've got the official Oldies 101 insulated travel mug. Also, a couple of tickets for you to go see comedian Todd Yon at the Coliseum this Friday. That's sponsored by the Funny Bone Comedy Club. And I've got a family four-pack of tickets for the Allen County Fair at the Fairgrounds, July 21st through the 26th. Les, thanks for playing.
Thank you.
Back to work. All right, 6:51. Here comes 15 in a row this hour. Supremes, Oldies 101. Three Rivers Festival weather for tonight. Fair and muggy, low of 66 right now. It's partly sunny, 77 in the grassroots. Oldies 101.
When I think of all the la-la-la-la-la
number one for oldies and fun, WLDE, Oldies 101.7.
Time.
times and fun oldies for an all-American city. WLDE Fort Wayne.
Oldies 101.7 Fort Wayne.
1, 2, 3 Good luck.
WMJI, where we do more than just care. A nationwide communication station.
Magic Cleveland weather.
Plenty of sunshine and low humidity today. It feels good. Chances tonight clear to partly cloudy. Overnight low 60. Partly cloudy start tomorrow with showers late in the day. High 75 and showers. High 73 Thursday. The UV is 5 and it's 72. Downtown Cleveland on your FM. Always 105.
WMJI.
You can dance every dance with a
ladies and gentlemen, Ravenna Maselli, playing all the greatest hits in America's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame city.
WMJI, Cleveland.
Mungo Jerry in the summertime, and here we are, Cleveland, one and oldie station, Ravenna Maselli, Magic 105, and Biz to Biz Trivia, the North Coast's most popular radio game show we're going to play in a few minutes, so stick around. Leslie Gore.
You don't know.
Round, get around, I get around, yeah.
WMJI has put up special billboards all over town. Now on these billboards, you'll see a prize you could win, a sound effect to listen for, and a special billboard blurt phone number. Listen to Lanigan, Webster, and Malone every weekday morning. When you hear the sound effect that's on the billboard, call the phone number that's on the billboard, and you could win the prize that's on the billboard. The sound effect doesn't count if it's in a commercial, and the billboards change regularly, so keep an eye out for them. There's billboards on Euclid Avenue, Lorraine Avenue, East 55th, and Nottingham. The Lanigan, Webster, and Malone Billboard Blurt Contest. From Magic 105.7, WMJI.
No voice tracking. Good promotions. Interaction with listeners. What programming concepts? What a big difference a few years makes when broadcasting's big boys own everything. I hope you've enjoyed our look back, and by the way, thanks for letting me label a few unmarked cassettes on DX Audio Service Time. If you have good radio in your hometown or your travels, why not share it with the members? Send your recordings to me, Phil Wayne, at 7545 County Highway 71, Harpster, Ohio, 43323-9364. All the AirCheck geeks would be most grateful. Now I think Fred has some musings from the members all ready to go.
Music.
That's our middle name. K-I-L-T.
Music.
610 in Houston.
The DX Audio Service Musings from Members. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views of the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, the editors, or publishers. Members may muse by calling the Action Line 24 hours a day.
Well, hello everyone, Joe Schwab here. And 2 days ago on Friday, I noticed the 1290 transmitter was on the air with some dead air. Saturday morning, I checked them out yesterday, and turns out what they're doing is they're playing a loop of contemporary and urban gospel music. It is WDZY, and it's owned by Wilkinson Radio Group, so we'll have to see what happens there with that. Other things, I got some interesting DXing back in mid-December, 600 and 690 from Jacksonville, 1010, the classic urban station from Atlanta, 1020 WRXI in Anderson, South Carolina, or WRIX, whichever one it is. And that's about it for now, except you might remember Jeff Katz, some of you from WBT. He is now doing afternoon drive on 1140 WRVA here in Richmond. About the Cumulus Westwood One situation, I tried to call the producers of the Dennis Miller Show, the call screener, and he said that it was a complicated situation, but they were still syndicated by Westwood One. So I don't know how Cumulus is involved with that, except they're on some Cumulus stations, including the one in Columbia, South Carolina. That's all the news for now. 73's and good DXing, everyone.
This is John Wesley Smith from Hallsville, Missouri. And over the last year or so, I've had a chance to visit family on my wife's side of the family up in Newton, Iowa, some 35 miles or so east of Des Moines. And it's a lot of fun playing with AM up there because, of course, you get a lot of the Iowa stuff, obviously, being in the middle of the state. But you get the bigger signals from Chicago and Omaha and Kansas City. And in the wintertime, you get WCCO from the Twin Cities in the daytime. And, of course, night, that's a lot of fun, too. All kinds of stuff coming in at night there. I was paying attention on this latest trip on the weekend in the middle of January to KIOA FM on 93.3. Many will remember that KIOA was on 940, doing top 40 for many years. I remember in the 70s, they used to run a little message during the energy crisis saying, don't listen to 50,000-watt radio stations. And I wonder who they had in mind, huh? Well, anyway, so KIOA FM is pretty cool. They're doing oldies, and it's the greatest hits, the 70s and 80s and some 60s and so on, like a lot of the oldies stations are doing these days. They sound really good. They're locally programmed with local announcers, and they got a great jingle package. One of their weekend announcers, I heard, evening guy, Jimmy Olson, super name, huh? Well, anyway, if you're interested in checking out KIOA online just for fun, it's KIOA.com.
This is Tim Hendel in Huntsville, and I really enjoyed the Honest to Goodness program from WCCO. Thank you, Mark, and I have a question. The host of that program, Dick Chapman, well, when I heard that voice, I thought to myself, I think maybe this is the same guy who did. Now, I have practiced this, folks. The Pfizer Utter Cream commercial, where he just broke up and laughed. By the way, I'll bet they sold more Pfizer cream that day, even to people who didn't have dairy cows. That was delightful. Was that the same guy? I know the voice sounded similar.
This is John Wesley Smith from Hallsville, Missouri, and I'm making these comments on February 17th. I was listening to WGN for a while this evening. They have changed their evening lineup so that Pete McMurray and the people that he's with are on from 7 to 11, presumably unless there's a hockey game or whatever else going on, Cubs in the summer or something. But they're saying that WGN has introduced a new sister station on FM at 87.7, and it's called The Game. And I guess it's online at thegamechicago.com or something like that. It'd be interesting to know how much power they put out and that sort of thing, but apparently one of their key people that was on in the evenings who did sports, David Kaplan, is on this new station. Anyway, interesting thing to hear an FM station on at 87.7 in Chicago. Wonder how many other cities will follow suit.
Hi, this is Mike in Aventura, Florida. I have a big question. I listen to the following radio stations. Magic 102.7, the home of Miami's greatest hits, Light 101.5, and Easy 93.1. Now, what do those stations have in common? They don't take requests. Now, Magic 102.7 had a request show in the middle of the day, back when they were music of the 60s and 70s, and they wouldn't play everything because they couldn't break format. For example, they couldn't play too many 50s songs or too many songs of the early 60s. Why is it that radio stations don't want to take requests anymore?
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. And to answer some questions, John Wesley Smith, what's going on with WGN is they have contracted with a Channel 6 television station, a low power, and they're just simply using the audio carrier, which is at 87.7, and just by chance, most radios will tune down to that frequency. So that's how they're getting away with it. And by the way, the power of that station is 6 kilowatts. And to Mike, well, the reason is very simple. Most stations are programmed either out of San Antonio or Atlanta. I don't think too many radio stations have their own music director and do their own music playlists anymore. In fact, I don't think too many stations have live people on the air anymore. And that's a function of us being complacent and not telling the FCC and Congress that we want our live radio back. If you'd like to muse, give us a call at area code 419-741-0205. Now, some news.
I'm Charlie Van Dyke, and you're listening to the DX Audio Service from the National Radio Club.
More listeners upset with format changes. This article appeared in RBR-TVBR magazine on February 10th, 2014. New research from Mark Kassoff and Company reveals that 84% of 18 to 64-year-old radio listeners in the United States agree strongly, or at least slightly, with this statement. It upsets you when a radio station you like changes format. And 44% agree strongly. Only 16% disagree, with a mere 5% disagreeing strongly. Among age groups, 35 to 44-year-olds are the most upset by format change. 89% agree that a format change by a station they like upsets them, and 55% agree strongly. Least upset are 18 to 24s, especially 18 to 24-year-old men. Still, 70% of them agree, with 26% agreeing strongly. These findings are based on 1,009 online interviews with 18 to 64-year-old radio listeners in the United States conducted in mid-January, part of Kassoff's ongoing Listener Think research. Said Mark Kassoff, the point of this research is not that stations should avoid format changes. Of course they should, if better opportunities present themselves. Our objective was to explore how much listeners care about radio, and the answer is a lot. He adds, we've seen how wrong in previous Listener Think research, like our fall P1 study, where we found that radio delivers emotional benefits to listeners beyond music, news, sports, etc., and when 70% agreed that if they couldn't listen to radio, something very important would be missing from their lives. Now, we're looking at listeners' engagement with radio from another angle, not what would happen if radio went away altogether, but on a more specific basis. What happens when a station they like changes? What brought this to mind was my own work, research that guides stations to better ratings, sometimes requiring dramatic format changes. Most recently, a client changed format from one that excelled among 45 and older listeners to one that focuses on 18 to 44-year-olds. There was a major emotional backlash among those left behind who went online to express feelings like, I am so upset, I am in mourning, this is a blow, very depressing, and some even threatening bodily harm to station executives. From a format perspective, the P1s, or most frequent listeners, of oldies classic hit stations, 89% agree, 61% strongly, and rock stations, 89% agree, 59% strongly, would be most upset when a station they like changes format. The article, Most Listeners Upset with Format Changes, appearing in RBR-TVBR magazine on February the 10th, 2014. For the DX Audio Service in Dallas, Texas, I'm Wally Warro.
Michigan antique radio buffs gather to show off sets, trade tips, and parts. This from the Detroit News, January 18th. Farmington Hills, Michigan. After he retired from his job as an elementary school teacher, Ed Schultz turned his hobby of repairing antique radios into a business. He now produces more than 200 plastic and rubber parts that he sells to collectors and claims to be the only one in the country doing what he does. Rubber parts are usually disintegrating on old radios. You can't just go to the hardware store to buy them because they're all different sizes. Given that most of the radios he supplies parts for are more than a half century old, business is pretty good for a niche market. Although most of the people he deals with are older folks, there are plenty of younger collectors getting into the hobby, he says. It's a real thrill to take a radio that hasn't worked in 40 or 50 years, go through it to fix the problems, and all of a sudden music comes out of it, he said. It's amazing. Collecting radios is a hobby that has sustained popularity through the years, even with the adoption of newer sound technology, said Mark Opat, who owns Antique Audio Radio Repair and is a board member of the Michigan Antique Radio Club. It's like a car, he said. Those are the only things where you really can combine the style of the area with the technology. The Michigan Antique Radio Club boasts 600 members across the country and holds four major electronic expos every year. Recently, members of the group met at the Caustic Activities Center in Farmington Hills to show off their repaired radios, exchange tips, and sell some units. Hundreds of tube and transistor radios were displayed on tables, while others had boxes and boxes of knobs, bulbs, and other bits to sell. The collections branched off from radios and included other sound electronics, like vintage television sets, Mac computers, and some early video gaming systems. But without doubt, the radios were what drew the crowds. Michigan is great for collecting because we're in the middle of the radio belt, said Opath of Plymouth, Michigan. It runs from Illinois to the East Coast, north of Kentucky. In the 1930s and 1940s, the area produced well-known brands like Zenith Radio Corporation in Chicago, Detrola in Detroit, and Philco in Philadelphia. Massive salesmen, there are still a large number of radios to be found in the region. Detrola was the largest Michigan radio manufacturer and was in business from 1931 until 1948, with a factory located at the corner of Beard and Chatfield in southwest Detroit. Opeth says back then World War II was starting and people would gather around the radio because they wanted to know what was going on. It's that nostalgia and history that keeps people investing in antique radios today, said Ken Nevins, and he would know about that. He's created his own private museum in his home with more than 500 radios on display. My wife has given up finding space in the basement, he said. Nevins, a retired Ford electrician, got his love of radios from a young age when his father was a radio engineer for the Ann Arbor Police Department back in the late 50s. Now, the Blissfield Township resident has his own radio repair business out of his home called Totally Tubular Radios, named because he focuses on early model tube radios. I started picking up radios wherever I could, figuring I was one of the only fools who cared about them, he said. But then I found out there was a whole club. Now a member of the Michigan Antique Radio Club, Nevin says he understands what keeps people buying the units. I think they remember listening to the Lone Ranger or the Shadow or the Theater of the Mind is so much bigger than a box with a picture on it, he said. They're like little time machines that put you back to that sweet spot, that sweet era. And that article from the Detroit News called Michigan Antique Radio Buffs Gather to Show Off Sets, Trade Tips, and Parts was published on January 18, 2014. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Can we save AM radio, keeping amplitude modulation out of the dustbin of history? This story comes from The Verge magazine on February 13, 2014, and was written by Trent Wolby. Before Facebook, before the internet, before cell phones and TV, and even FM radio, there was AM radio. Entire families would gather around elaborate refrigerator-sized receivers and bask in the warm glow of vacuum tubes as news, music, and entertainment poured from the only source of broadcast content in existence. NBC, ABC, and CBS were all on AM before they were on TV. Amplitude modulation operated at the very core of American culture. But in America, we have a bad habit of eviscerating the past. Radio broadcasters, once a vital part of American culture, have been shedding listeners for decades. The mass transition to digital media has been particularly brutal for the AM band, where listenership against FM audiences is at a record low of 15%. Predictably, there are only a few people that care about this impending extinction, but one of them just happens to head the Federal Communications Commission. FCC Commissioner Aji Pai grew up listening to high school basketball games on KLKC, 1540 AM, in his native Parsons, Kansas. It's not hard to envision the son of Indian immigrants actively becoming more American as he participated in this oral ritual practiced by generations of homebound sports fans before him. AM's low fidelity makes it relatively unsuitable for music compared to FM. This has traditionally made it a home of hyperlocal talk radio programming, particularly when it comes to sports and community news. The AM band is still home to 90% of all news and talk programming. I'm often asked why we should care about the future of AM radio, Pai said in September at a meeting with the National Association of Broadcasters. If you care about diversity, you should care about AM radio. Most minority-owned radio stations are located in the AM band. If you care about localism, you should care about AM radio. Many AM radio stations cover local news, weather, and community events. KLKC still airs ball games today, as well as a sort of Craigslist without the internet show called The Trading Post. If you care about diversity, you should care about AM radio. But listening to AM radio in 2014 can be an exercise in frustration. When amplitude modulation was developed in the early 1900s, there was little else in the air to get in its way. Now we have iPhones with as many as 8 transmitters on board, pervasive Wi-Fi, and military communications in the mix. Non-digital machinery like cars can also wreak havoc on a signal. You can usually hear the RPMs of your motor fluctuate clearly with in-dash AM receivers, winding up and down with each gear shift. Even nearby light bulbs can make an otherwise clear broadcast sound like garbage. That's because almost any AC-connected appliance radiates frequencies below the 30 MHz band, which is also where AM lives. High-powered ESPN and Radio Disney affiliates can usually be heard clearly, but the nostalgic core of AM, those small-town stations like KLKC, are increasingly marginalized by the massive financial, technical, and legal costs of operating a licensed transmitter. This is where having an AM junkie like Pi at the head of the FCC gets interesting. He's letting his nostalgia for the antiquated band leak into his policy decisions. A Pi with a plan. On October 29th, the FCC published a set of guidelines that hopes will revitalize further the AM band by identifying ways to enhance AM broadcast quality and proposing changes to our technical rules that would enable AM stations to improve their service. There are 6 core proposals in the FCC's Notice of Proposed Rulemaking number 13-249. The first is to allow AM broadcasters an exclusive opportunity to file for an FM translator, that is, to take their existing signal and rebroadcast it into the more widely consumed FM band. Easy enough to understand. The remaining 5 address some very technical economic regulations. In its first 50 years, AM was a large enough player in the media landscape that it required lots of technical regulations to keep stations from interfering with one another's signals while simultaneously serving their communities with adequate signals. Advertiser money was pouring in, and business was big enough that it could support a large and robust engineering workforce to ensure compliance with all those regulations. Now that its audience is relatively microscopic and competition is low, those regulations need to be relaxed to make AM a viable medium, especially for minority and rural, read small budget, broadcasters to be able to effectively serve their communities. If the FCC doesn't adopt these rules, or something like them, the AM band may be simply too big of a hassle for Americans to both produce for and listen to. In a comment filed on the FCC's proposed guidelines, Lee Ellis, the owner of WAKE 1500 AM in Porter County, Indiana, said, "As helpful as some of these proposals in the NRPM might be, they may not achieve a noticeable change in the AM services long term." Ellis is one of the many small market station heads that filed official comments in support of the proposed changes to the AM band itself, but he's also resigned to the fact that their businesses will probably be untenable if they don't get an FM translator as well. Even if every AM listener in the country could hear any local station they wanted to perfectly clearly 24 hours a day, the fact remains that there just aren't very many people hitting the AM button on their tuners these days, and there's almost nothing anyone can do to change that trend. So what we end up with is proposed legislation that mostly aims to enhance the AM programming band by turning it into FM programming. Digital, or HD AM transmission, is something we've been hearing about for more than a decade, but most of us have never actually heard it. Like digital TV, it sounds better, but requires stations to buy new transmitters and listeners to buy new receivers. And unlike TV's transition to digital, there are still legal barriers to rolling out all digital broadcasts. The National Association of Broadcasters commented on their ongoing experimentation with digital AM broadcasts, but pointed out inherent regulatory challenges. Deployment of all digital AM radio service would require a change to the Commission's rules. After spending so much time in technical and legal beta, digital AM seems more like an expensive niche destination than a viable alternative to its analog ancestor. Full circle. If you can get away from the dense fog of interference that hangs around urban areas, there are still plenty of transcendent moments to be had with AM radio. Rural listeners with a good receiver, like the amplitude modulation specialist Tivoli Pal, can pull in signals that are full of otherworldly warmth and human depth. When it's engineered well and heard in the middle of nowhere, that lo-fi signal can feel like the voice of God. It can also serve as a way to connect you to 100 years of cultural history, as the sound hasn't changed much since it was introduced. But since the efficacy of NPRM 13-249 is hinged on FM translation of AM programming, it certainly doesn't feel like the AM band as a medium itself is going to be a viable platform much longer. When it's engineered well, that lo-fi signal can feel like the voice of God. If there's one thing that will keep AM alive in the coming centuries, it's simplicity. It's not difficult to envision some future world where all of the communications technology we take for granted today are decimated by forces either in or outside of our control. In the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, the only source of broadcast news on Long Island was WALK 1370 AM. Battery-powered radios are by far the most commonplace emergency news appliances we have, and they're operable during power outages, unlike most home networks or televisions. AM signals are also our most bomb-proof way to communicate over long distances. Because they reflect off the Earth's ionosphere, signals from the USA can be bounced to Europe with a simple, almost instantaneous hop. You certainly can't say that about the Internet, or even about an overseas phone call. But in the event of AM radio's likely demise, I can see a possible future of eventual deregulation and endless creative opportunity. Like a boomtown that's lost its commercial appeal, the AM band may eventually return to the Wild West feel that it had when it was first deployed in the early 1900s, a low-rent haven that artists and other cultural opportunists will inhabit and reinvent for their own devices. Imagine an instant global communications medium free of regulation. It sounds a lot like the Internet used to be.
If you remember back a few issues, I talked about how I commented in the matter of the revitalization of AM radio, and one of my comments was concerning the amount of noise which affects the reception of AM radio. Well, that noise has gotten so bad that it now affects cell phones in the 700 megahertz and up region. The owner of a downtown Los Angeles skyscraper has been cited by the federal government after an investigation discovered that light bulbs inside the building caused interference with cell phone service. Some working in the 41-story Ernst & Young Plaza at the corner of Figueroa and 7th Streets have complained of dropped calls, unsent text messages, and cell phone data issues. "I can't download anything," Patrick Gonslave said, adding that he thought it was just the concrete from the building that was causing the interference. According to the Federal Communications Commission complaint, which was brought before the commission by Verizon Wireless, the actual reason for poor cell phone service is the fluorescent lights inside the building. "I do a lot of work on my computer and on my laptop," Tim Morrissey said. "I use two computers at the same time, so it'd be nice to be able to have both of my computers running, and also to be able to receive cell phone calls from my clients." An investigation began earlier this year after Verizon complained about the interference, according to the document. In response to Verizon Wireless's continual complaints that the interference has not been resolved, agents from the Los Angeles office of the Federal Communications Commission used portable direction-finding equipment and confirmed the radio emissions on Verizon Wireless's 700 MHz frequencies were emanating from ceiling fluorescent light fixtures and ballasts inside the building. Verizon customers have been the most affected by the interference, but customers of other cell phone providers have also felt the effects of the interference. Consequently, the Federal Communications Commission has cited the building's owner, New York-based Brookfield Office Properties, over the interference. The government agency has given the owners 30 days to replace all the General Electric bulbs in the building or face a potential significant fine, according to the complaint. Brookfield should take steps to come into compliance with the rules, including eliminating interference, the complaint read. Brookfield is hereby on notice that if it subsequently engages in any conduct of the type described in this citation, including violations of Section 18.111B and 18.115A of the rules, it may be subject to civil and criminal penalties, including, not limited to, substantial monetary fines. General Electric has offered to exchange all the bulbs inside the building, according to the Federal Communications Commission.
It's time for Curious City, WBEZ's news gathering experiment where we track down answers to your questions about Chicago and the region. Today, we've got an on-the-road edition. We'll answer two questions related to cars. I'm Mickey Capper, and I reported our first story about cars, car radios to be exact. So we got this question from Doug Schenkelberg. Doug listens to radio all the time in his charcoal gray 2010 Toyota Corolla, but he noticed he gets static at a particular corner in downtown Chicago. His question even mentions the specific spot.
Why does radio reception always go bad at the intersection of Canal and Van Buren Street?
Well, I want to answer Doug's question about radio problems at Canal and Van Buren, not just for him, but because, hey, we all love radio, right?
It's kind of magic, right? Because you're in your car and it's in the air and you don't really think about it all that much until you can't have it anymore.
Oh, did I mention that Doug's magical radio experience and the reception problem involves none other than WBEZ Chicago? Anyway, here's how I can help. I did research and talked to radio engineers, and I learned about the usual suspects when it comes to reception problems. I'm going to run through those and see if they apply in Doug's case. Let's start with distance, a radio reception problem you've probably encountered during a road trip. Basically, you drive too far from a broadcast tower and the radio reception slowly starts to fade out because the signal gets weak. But here's the thing. Doug reported a problem at Canal and Van Buren. That's less than 2 miles from the John Hancock Center, where WBEZ blasts its signal. So why is Doug getting static when he's so close to the antenna? There are some clues in the location.
It's really close to the old post office building. For some reason in my head, I blame that building. There's no basis for that other than it's an old, creepy building.
There's probably nothing supernatural at work. Instead, there are three problems that can cause static, even when you're close to a broadcast antenna. And these three are shadowing, multipath interference, and other radio stations. Let's take on shadowing. Shadowing is pretty much what it sounds like. Something gets between you and the broadcast antenna, and it effectively makes a radio shadow. I have WBEZ engineer Peter Femel help us out.
If you're in the right shadow of a certain building, our signal may have a hard time coming down into that valley.
The second problem is called multipath interference. I have to admit, I think the concept of multipath interference is so cool because it happens when a radio signal interferes with itself. That might sound nerdy, but here's what's important. When an antenna broadcasts a signal, that signal moves in all directions. Again, engineer Peter Femel.
As a signal propagates through the city, it's bouncing off of different buildings.
So even if a signal has a direct path from your radio to the broadcast tower, that signal is also bouncing off of the buildings around you. Sometimes, a bounce signal and the direct signal hit your antenna together. But the bounce signal traveled further, so it's a little bit delayed.
Which manifests itself as, just some slight static on your radio.
Again, you lose reception, even when distance shouldn't be an issue. Okay, the last problem we're going to go over comes from all the other high-powered radio stations in the city.
They're near another very high-power RF installation, and that's swamping their radio.
Femel says car radios can get confused. If your radio station is weak, some radios will look for the next most powerful signal, even if it's a completely different radio station on another frequency. Okay, so now that we know these three different potential problems, let's see if we can find out what's going on at Doug's Corner. I drive down with Brian Sapp from WBEZ's engineering department to Canal and Van Buren, southwest of the Loop, and we listen to the radio. While this might not sound especially technical, I've talked to other broadcast engineers, and it turns out that this is a standard way to handle reception complaints. Anyway, at first, the WBEZ signal comes through fine. But when we get to the corner, the signal goes bad. We look around, and it seems like the corner could suffer from all three of these reception problems I mentioned. For starters, Doug's Corner is across downtown Chicago from the Hancock Center. That means there are lots of skyscrapers in between, and that means lots of radio shadows. Then, the corner is right next to the Chicago River, with skyscrapers on either side. Brian points this out to me.
Because there are a couple of buildings nearby, I mean, we're going to go right through like almost like a canyon of sorts.
Radio signals can bounce back and forth from building to building in this urban canyon, creating prime conditions for multipath interference. And one more thing, the Willis Tower, a.k.a. the Sears Tower.
Yeah, it really does seem like we're just right behind the Sears Tower.
You see, Doug's Corner is right by the Willis Tower, formerly known as the Sears Tower. Many high-powered radio stations broadcast from the Willis Tower.
Sears Tower.
So a confused car radio has lots of other options. In the car we're using, when we listen carefully, we hear Queen coming in from another station.
Pick up on this. Nice oldies, yeah.
So, Doug, at the corner of Van Buren and Canal, it seems like your radio problem is all of the above. Shadowing from skyscrapers downtown, multipath from the Chicago River, and other radio stations from the Willis Tower's broadcast antennas. The Sears Tower broadcast antennas. With all those issues, unfortunately, there's really not much that can be done.
Public TV vet takes reins at museum. Former VOA facility needs millions to achieve vision. This article comes from the February 15th, 2014 edition of Cincinnati.com and was written by Sheila McLaughlin. What do you do when you have a dazzling $10 million to $12 million concept to turn the Voice of America Bethany Relay Station into a national museum and no money? You hire a public television exec with connections to help drum up donations. That's the priority for the board of the National VOA Museum of Broadcasting when Jack Dominick joins the organization March 1 as its first director. Dominick retires February 28 from WCET-TV as its executive vice president and station manager. He's quite a gentleman. He's got a long, long history of activities in the Cincinnati area. He certainly knows people, said Ken Reiser, museum board chairman. That's very important. Dominick's hiring comes about a year after Westchester Township trustees approved a 5-year lease for the landmark that will allow the board to raise funds as a nonprofit corporation. Trustees previously agreed to contribute up to $335,000 over 5 years to help fund the museum until it could generate enough money to sustain the operation. The 35,000-square-foot Art Deco building off Tylersville Road once was surrounded by a field of antennas that, for more than 50 years, transmitted Voice of America programming overseas. Initially, it was used to combat anti-American propaganda during World War II. The building now houses the museum, which includes collections and exhibits from the VOA Bethany Station, Media Heritage's Greater Cincinnati Museum of Broadcast History, the Gray History of Wireless Museum, and the Westchester Amateur Radio Association's Control Room. The museum is open for tours from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. on the third Saturday of each month. The multi-million dollar master plan developed about 3 years ago includes those spaces along with a restored circa 1940 lobby, a grand concourse where multimedia presentations would play, a gallery that would focus on the role Bethany Station played in World War II, a restored control room, theater, and event space with exhibits. Even before he launches a fundraising campaign, Dominic said it's important to make people realize how important Greater Cincinnati was to the Voice of America effort, including advancing the technology that allowed radio transmissions that could reach across the world. My vision is very much to spotlight not only what has happened with Voice of America over the years, but how clear and truthful information is absolutely imperative for us to continue, Dominic said. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Chris Gay.
What's happening in the business? Well, SiriusXM is reporting a strong 2013 fourth quarter, but it's cutting back on two music channels to save a quarter or two. The 50s on 5 and 90s on 9 channels will henceforth be jockless, says DCR-TV. It's hard to imagine that the expense of these jocks, presumably part-timers who may have cut their breaks from their own homes, was significantly impacting the bottom line. SiriusXM reports its Q4 and full-year numbers Tuesday morning, but we know that in the third quarter it did $961 million in revenues while incurring $72.3 million in costs for programming and content. And these reported cuts on the 50s and 90s channels come as SiriusXM CEO Jim Meyer and President Scott Greenstein are smiling over a booming new auto market that puts them into more and more vehicles. We know from a previous announcement that Sirius outperformed its guidance for net subscriber growth ending in 2013, with 25,560,000 subscribers. What we don't know is what kind of cuts new majority owner Liberty Media has been asking out of management. One of the quieter stories of the post-merger era for Sirius and XM is how they've been cutting talent costs. The recent Howard Stern birthday bash wasn't cheap. It was partly intended to show Howard some love ahead of contract renewal talks. But like some former colleagues at the 50s and 90s channels, he may find less love than before. From Dallas, Texas, I'm Wally Waro for the DX Audio Service.
Well, it's time to take a look at our CPC test calendar. KCKM 1330 in Monhanas, Texas, will test on Saturday, March the 22nd from 0100 to 0130 Eastern Local Time with 12 kilowatts non-directional into a 5/8 wave tower. This test will consist mainly of Morse code sweep tones and sound effects known to cut through the mud. There will be a few voice announcements spread out through the test. General Manager and Station Owner Bob Souza will accept reports, email reports, to Bob, B-O-B, at kckm1330.com. And if you have an MP3 attachment to prove that you've recorded it, he would appreciate that as well. Snail mail reports can be accepted at Post Office Box 990, Monhanas, that's M-O-N-A-H-A-N-A-S, Texas, 79756. A verification postcard will be sent. A stamp to defray postage cost is always a good idea to send. Several members have asked about licenses that are canceled for AM radio stations that have been silent for more than a year. Well, the answer to this question and why they get canceled is that in 1996, Congress passed a law providing that a broadcast station's license is automatically terminated if the station is silent for more than 1 year. If the Federal Communications Commission has reason to believe that a radio station falls into this category, it normally sends the station a letter informing it that the license is canceled and that further operation is prohibited. The letter usually states that the station has 30 days to provide evidence that the FCC is incorrect in believing that the station is silent for more than a year. If the listing stays in the AM query longer than 30 days, it's usually not clear whether there's an actual serious question as to whether the station was silent, or if the FCC just hasn't gotten around to making a final deletion. Currently, there are 11 stations in this category. And finally, where do deleted call letters go? When the Federal Communications Commission cancels a station's license, the station's status in the Federal Communications Commission Online Consolidated Database System, the CDBS, is usually set to License Canceled, and the station is deleted from the online AM query. In some cases, however, the listing is retained in the AM query with a D for deleted in front of the station's call letters. As of February 21st of 2014, there are 42 such deleted stations in the AM query. These stations fall into three major groups: licenses canceled for being silent for more than 1 year, licenses canceled for failure to submit for a renewal application, and licenses canceled at the station's request. And now you know the rest of the story. And that is it for this edition of the DX Audio Service for March 2014. We'll see you next month, which is our anniversary, starting the 29th month of the DX Audio Service. Feel free to give us a call on the Musings line and reminisce a little bit. Until next time, get out and support radio and your radio club. 73 and good DX.